crossed.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Da! The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by hellboundbooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is, what is it? It is episode 78 of the New Panic Room. It is, I think it's Thursday, I'm guessing. Wild guess, it is Thursday, 25th of January, 9:30 Central. And, of course, it's time for New Panic Room. So, welcome, dear listener. And all very strange. So, a few technical problems, thanks to Blog Talk Radio people who are increasingly shite, I would say. So, watch this space. We may well be coming from different airwaves shortly. But anywho, it wouldn't be a show, would it, without my old friend.
Woo!
Hello, drunken one. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, but I wanted to say, you know, back in our early days, we used to complain about AT&T all the time, so now we've switched and we're going to complain about Blog Talk.
Oh, no, AT&T, they're still shite, but haven't been. It's just, I mean, just literally on a you know, weekly basis, out the cable just, you know. I always know it's gone on the blink because my boy, it always waits till Saturday and he's mid-game and he's, oh, the Wi-Fi's not working and it's not and I've got to reboot everything. Then you phone them. You phone Dave in Calcutta and he's and can you unplug it? I've unplugged it three fucking times already. Well, can you unplug it again? Yeah, seriously, dude, I will unplug you. I will. And they make you go through all the rigmarole and say, oh, it's broken. Well, yeah, I know that. You know, I've done it that many times. We just had to replace his cable box because we had to go through it all 20 minutes on the phone. Well, 20 minutes to get through. 20 minutes on the phone just for them to tell me what I figured out anyway. It was just like, here's the funny thing, because then I had to return the busted box. So me being, I'm going back. There's an AT&T shop, literally, on the way to the mall where I was going. So I'll pop in, and pop, oh, we can't accept that here. You've got to take it to a UPS store and have it shit. What? You're an AT&T store. Can you? No, we can't. And they just look at you.
Easy.
Oh, not my job. You know, it's too hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, so this is where people go who fail high school, I think, you know.
Well, I told you about that horrible experience I had earlier today. I think it was 45 minutes out of my life talking to this man who English was definitely not his first language. And when he was giving me the confirmation number or whatever, I laughed out loud. And then I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that. Because he said it was B for victory. And oh my God, it's so bad.
Oh dear Lord.
I'm writing down B,
victory. It is tragic, isn't it? I'll tell you, I had a great, because I work from home, busy in a way, and I don't see many. But these two guys came peddling Jesus. And they came knocking on the door, and he's there, about scriptures. And I thought, he said, you're not a believer. No, I'm not a believer. So I said, it's a crock of shit, mate, to be honest. You know, Bible thing, isn't it? And I said, okay, but where's the proof? Give me the proof. Happy to believe you give me the proof. He said, well, it's in the Bible. So I said, so the Bible's true because it says so in the Bible. So it's a little bit circular, that, isn't it, fella? And I kept him talking. He was itching to go. My dog's trying to get through the window, and he's trying to go. And it's, I'll listen to what you've got to say. Give me a sales pitch, dude. Save my soul. And sadly, he didn't. But
I feel bad for him.
Say again.
I feel bad for him now. That's kind of like sending, the Jehovah's Witnesses or something to Ozzy Osbourne's door. That's what I picture. So I feel bad for him.
One, there's a big sign saying no solicitation. In fact, I nearly thumped a guy yesterday. Because I'm trying to work, and my dog's going mental, and it breaks me off my flow. I'm trying to work, and he's there saying, I'm not selling anything. We're from a roofing company. Well, of course you're selling something. You want to go up on my roof and sell me a new fucking roof? I said, there's a big sign on the subdivision that says no soliciting. There's a sign on my door that says no soliciting. And I said, can you not fucking respect that? And he, oh, well, sir, I'm not going to say, seriously, you've got to the count of three, and I'm going to open this door, and my dog's going to come out, and God help you. And they just go pale and run off. Like, it's just,
oh,
I mean,
God.
Seriously, what part of no soliciting do you not get?
Well, he wasn't
seriously.
Trying to sell you anything. It was just, yeah, I know, that's crazy.
He just wanted to look at my roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Tea. Maybe he wanted tea, a hot beverage.
He nearly got my boot up his ass, I can tell you. I was in no mood. I'm never in a mood. I'm never in a good mood, me, really. To be honest, I spend far too much time. Yeah, I know, it's hard to... a couple of things, actually. I came across this. I mean, it's not often Trump... You know, resonates with me, as you know. This really, really...
Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change.
And I don't know if you've seen... the footage that goes with that. And he's obviously as sincere can be. I mean, you know. And there's a girl behind, I don't know who the hell she is, to be honest, a young girl, and she's nodding sagely, you know. And it's like, you're in for a shock, love, to be honest, you know, because one day you're going to be... But I think what we should do as, you know, the Panic Room and the Hellbound Books, we should start a campaign to stop the sheer horror of women being forced to give birth in the ninth month of gestation. You know, it is, I'm appalled that in this day and age, you know, we are in the 21st century and women are being forced to give birth in the ninth month. I mean, it is beyond disgraceful.
That's just craziness.
I thought,
yeah.
You know, as a race, we were beyond that. I really did. So I'm on board with Trump on that one. It is disgraceful. Although what is probably more disgraceful is that you, and I'm going to distance myself here, you lot have a president who spouts that crap. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
wait,
he's just...
You're here, too.
I couldn't vote.
Here.
I'm not allowed to vote because I'm not a citizen. I'm just a sort of... I'm a legal alien, as to quote Sting.
Yeah, but you chose...
So it's all your fault.
You
nothing to do with me. Nope, I wash my hands. Nothing to do with me at all. It's all your fault. This is what you get, people. This is what you get.
Yeah, I do. You know, I do. Yeah, there's truth to that because, you know, somebody voted him and it wasn't me, but somebody sure did.
Sadly, not the majority. That was the worst thing. Not the majority. The majority didn't want him. It's like, what is going on? And now this whole thing. Although, to be fair, I think he's got up in my estimation, this alleged running around hotel bedrooms with Stormy Winters or whatever her name is, Stormy Daniels or Stormy Weather or whatever, this porn star, you know, which is great. I mean, good on you, Trump, you know, but to do it allegedly, literally days after Melania had given birth to Barron, again, presumably having been forced to give birth to Barron in the ninth month of her pregnancy. He's despicable. His wife's in hospital just giving birth to his kid, and he's running around a hotel room semi-naked with a porn star. I mean, you know, it makes you question the guy's morals, really. But then again, this is a guy who was voted in. You know, on one of his biggest tickets was, oh, we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to fucking well pay for it. No, they're not. And now he's gone cap in hand to Congress to pay for it at a time when the government's closed down because there's no money. I mean, am I missing something?
No.
I mean, you're from here. I'm not. Is there something I'm missing?
I don't think so. No, I think the majority of us now are just. I'm in awe. I really am. I everything I see that, you know, new things that I see that I'm just. I can't believe it. It's like I'm watching some kind of really, really bad reality.
It's like
TV
a very bad apocalyptic sitcom by David Lynch, isn't it? And to be fair, the word, you know, the adjective clusterfuck doesn't even begin to cover it. Not even close. We need a new, you know, a new lexicon to describe the ineptitude of this man.
Yeah.
But
I,
you know
I,
what's going to happen now? We're going to get our first guest on, and she's going to be an avid Trump supporter, and the rest of the show is just going to go down the toilet. But anyway, so as usual, I haven't bothered to read the notes. So what's going on tonight? What is going on, Xtina?
Well, see, I picked the first guest on purpose just so you would be have to say her name. I did that for you.
So Joe Holarty. You mean?
Yeah, that one. I wanted to, you know, give you a hard time because I love it when you have to pronounce names that aren't the easiest. I do.
I know.
I try to find hard names for you to pronounce, but no, I'm excited to talk to her. I just finished her book a couple nights ago, and it was pretty spooky. And I'm a big fan of supernatural and paranormal type things, and her book had a lot of that, and it was really good. And so I'm excited to talk to her.
Well, should we? Should we talk to her? Do you think
we
should?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. Joe, are you there?
Hi, I am here.
Well, hello.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming along. It's always wonderful. It's always wonderful to have a guest or two. You know, otherwise, the show would be dull, to be honest.
It would be. We would probably find things to talk about, but I don't know if anybody would listen. You know.
Yeah, but would it matter? You know, because we'd be happy. We'd be happy in our own little environment. There.
But it is always fun when we have guests, especially guests that I've read their books. That's how I'm excited. Both guests tonight that we have, I read both of their books, so I'm giving myself a gold star for that.
There you go. Have a team point.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. Yeah. So we have. Hopefully I did pronounce your name right, Joe. I'm going to just call you Joe now because I think I pronounced
right.
It once and that was it. You,
you got it right.
Fantastic.
Yay.
Yeah, give me a team point. Brilliant. You are a Native American memoir author and storyteller, and you're here to talk about your book, Look Away.
That's right.
So, hey, tell us a bit about it. I mean, I know Xtina has read it. I haven't, so you're going to have to fill me in.
Well, if I was at your house and a guy came to your house to tell you about the Lord, I think I would be able to have a very good conversation with him.
Well, you know, I try actually, because I do. I know my stuff, you know thine enemy and all that. I know my stuff. But he was just, I think he was scared. I know he was scared of me or the dog, actually. But he was just like, he just wanted to, when he could see I wasn't going to be an easy, oh, yeah, you know, praise Jesus, bring me into the flock sort of person. I wasn't an easy convert. He just wanted to go, I think.
Well, bless his heart. He had a nerve to go knock on somebody's door and do that. So you got to give him lots of credit for that.
Right.
Moving on. Tell us about the book, Jim.
Look Away is my personal stories. I was compiling a book, and I have these stories that really didn't fit into it, and I didn't really know what to do with them. So I pulled them out, and I just decided that they were just going to go into their own book, and it just kind of blossomed from there. And I have been messaged and cussed out and all kinds of things while readers were reading and fussed out because it had scared them so badly. But these are my personal stories over the years and my personal experiences. So I made sure to write it in a way where the reader experienced it just as I experienced it, because when I wrote it, I was reliving it. And so I wrote it just
fantastic.
As I relived it.
Also, so these stories are based on actual events, yeah?
I
wouldn't even say based on. I'm pretty sure
they're actual truths, yeah.
They're
actual events that happened to me, everything that I wrote happened, and I put it on paper. And they were just stories that I really never, some of them I really never wanted to relive again, but I just happened to be able to do it. And I have pictures in the book because there are a lot, I have a lot of witnesses and a lot of people that were there during these times that collaborate my stories word for word. You know, I was either living with them or they were there and they saw the same things I saw. So, this, you know, I have a lot of backup with all these stories.
You know, I have to say that I think for me, paranormal is probably the scariest thing, you know, to read about, to, you know, movies or anything. And, you know, I have to give you credit because if any of those things had actually happened to me, because I do believe in the paranormal, I really do, and it scares the heck out of me. So if any of those things had happened to me, I don't know, I think that I'd be doing the show from the loony bin or something. I don't think I could have handled it, and I think that, you know, I don't know. I sometimes I think
we
that...
We all have coping mechanisms, and you know, like I said in the book, you know, we've all seen the movies and we've all had that conversation. Oh, if that was me, I would have never come back, you know, or if that happened to me. Well, you know, we all say that. Even I say that. And but when you're in that situation, your mind just finds a way to cope, and it looks away. It blocks it out. It files it away deep down inside of your mind so that it's not real. And it just, you find a way to cope, just like anybody in a traumatic situation. Something in your mind clicks, and it's self-preservation. And so, I'm still that way. I still compartmentalize things, and if it makes me uncomfortable, if it makes me just feel a certain way, I block it out. And to this day, and these stories go back to 1985, and so I still do that. Yeah, I still block things out when it makes and it get, puts me to a certain point. I block it.
Now the excerpt that you're going to read the reading for us, that scene in the book, that was pretty hairy. It was pretty scary. I mean, I definitely was in the bathroom with you for that. I was.
That was my, yeah, I hope so, because I wanted some company. Yes, and I was discussing this with my old roommates, and they remember coming home and finding me and me telling them what happened and freaking out. And so they remember all of this just like I do, except they weren't there when it happened. But they heard all about it as soon as they got back home.
Now, how long did you live in that house after that? Like, how long, you know? Oh, God, I can't imagine.
After the last experience, after it tried to kill me in the waterbed, I did not stay much longer. That was when I had bruises and scratches on me. And I moved out. I had to sleep on somebody's couch when I left at that point. So, that was my breaking point. That was when I could not look away anymore.
I have to say, reading, especially the first half of it, I definitely had a real. I read the books that it was the oldest daughter from the family of the movies, The Conjuring, you know, that movie in the franchise or whatever. The oldest daughter wrote the what happened, and they were House of Darkness, House of Light, or something like that. And it gave me a feel of those books. It did, and I was so creeped out when I was reading, you know, because this family lived in this house for like I think it was 10 years or something, and No, I could not have done it. I think I would have rather been on this. I couldn't have done it. No, I couldn't.
I know. And I still can't believe I did it. I still can't believe it either. It's a funny story is I have some very close author friends who write paranormal and they write horror and they refuse to read this book. And they refuse and they're like, I can't do real. I can't do real. I can't. I'll never sleep again. And I'm like, you write this. You write about the horrible things. And they're like, writing about fiction is one thing. Truth is another. And I can't deal with the truth. And
no,
so,
it's true, though. It's very true. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, when I think of like the horror franchises, you know, you got Freddy and Jason. And, you know, they're scary. They give you a good jump scare and stuff. But for some reason, paranormal, ghost or demon, something like that, that is what does it for me. That is what just talking about now, I'm, you know, my room is dark because I just turned it off, and now I'm looking around me like, oh my God, just talking about it is going to invoke some kind of evilness or something.
Yeah, I think it's the same as, you know, we all, everybody likes watching murders and serial killers on the TV, but, you know, you read some true crime, you know, you read, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, you read Ed Gein, you read John McGann, I mean, any of those, and that's what chills me. The fact that this is not made up. These are real people. These are people. Somebody lived next door to these people. Somebody had John Wayne Gacy doing his clown act at their kid's birthday party.
Oh God!
You know, I mean, imagine being one of those kids. I mean, just. You know, but that for me is the scariest bit. You know, is that it's just the normalcy of it. Like you say with the paranormal stuff. You know, it's not big old creepy gothic house and that. It's just bog standard houses like the ones we all live in. That's what makes it scary. I think that's where you know the movie's Paranormal Activity resonated because it wasn't, you know, your big ghost story and all, it was just little things happening and that. But it was. I mean, the way they filmed it obviously was made to look like it was real, and it was just the realism.
Yeah.
And I think that's what gets you, you know, as you say, you know, this is. I love the real stuff, and I read a bunch of Ed and Lorraine Warren stories a while ago. I think probably after The Conjuring came out, or after Annabelle came out, and you know, and it's. The way they write, they're just written like matter of fact, you know, like we did this, and you read it, seriously, these people have just, they're that desensitized to it. You know, there's all this creepy shit going on. It's just like, well, you just documented it as if they were documenting, you know, wildlife or something, you know, but it's just, it is scary stuff.
Right. And it's one thing to document it from a third person view. It's another thing when it was something that happened to that person and that they're telling their story. And that just really makes it that much more impactful. And it makes us all susceptible to something like that happening, you know, because none of us are immune to these sort of things. It could happen to anybody. And that's the most terrifying part of it all is,
that's the scary bit for somebody reading it is that this could happen. You know, that creaking door that I just assumed was, you know, the wind rattling. So that could be something, you know, and that's what keeps you awake at night.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely going to keep me awake tonight, I think. So
you just need to drink more, Xtina.
Then I won't know.
Drink. Yeah, exactly. You'll be too drunk.
So do you have the reading ready for us, Joe?
I do. I'm ready. Okay.
It's pretty creepy, so everybody, you know, make sure you have your light on.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sitting with the lights out looking forward to it.
This is an excerpt from Look Away by Joe Halati, and this is from the chapter called A Mambled Ghost Story, and it's titled Who's There? I did not like staying home alone, so I would seek out my friends by calling around to see who was available and invite them over to keep me company. That way I would not be alone and the only one in the house. Of course, we all had jobs. During the day, Joe and Aaron would be gone for work. My position in a local retail store is part-time, which meant my working hours would fluctuate. This forced me to be home by myself more times than not. On this weekend, the guys ran out together for an errand and promised to be back soon. I decided to take advantage of having a full hot water tank all to myself and went into the only bathroom in the house to take a long hot shower. Just when I had a head full of shampoo, somebody tapped on the bathroom door. "Wow, y'all are back fast," I called toward the taps. I continued with washing my hair as the taps on the door began again. Tap, tap, tap. Three quick taps, producing a light to medium knuckle sound upon the old wood door of the bathroom. "I'll be out in a minute," I sing-song back to them from the closet tub shower. Tap, tap, tap. "Seriously, y'all, I just got in here," I holler back at them, minus my sing-songing. Knock, knock, knock. Harder now, more deliberate. A full fist of knuckles rapping against the wood. "Fine, I'm getting out," I yell, growl toward the door. My hair is dripping wet, and I only have one towel to dry off with. I wrap it around me and loudly call out to them. "I didn't get to shave my legs because of you, and I still have shampoo in my hair, and it got in my eyes." I'm thinking to myself, one of the guys must really need to use the toilet, otherwise they would never act like this. If all he needs to do is pee, I'm going to cut holes in all of his underwear later since he can easily pee outside. Pound, 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 pound. I jump at the noise. Two fists are now beating on the doorway. Back and forth, nonstop. I can see my side of the bathroom door moving from the beating it was receiving from the other side. My raging anger keeps me distracted as the door continues to be beat upon from the hallway. I unlock the knob by turning the old skeleton key. The hitting on the wood from the front side is relentless, and I am more than ready to unleash my wrath upon one of my roommates. I open the door just as it jerked toward me from one last hard knock against it. I let go of the doorknob as it swings open toward me. I'm expecting to see Joe or Aaron standing 2 feet in front of me, but the hallway is empty. No one is here. The hallway is empty. No one is here. Somebody is here. I heard them. I felt them banging on the door. Somebody must be here. Oh, my God. The razor-sharp silence of the empty house slices its way through me, only to be replaced with the swishing sound in my ears produced by my heart straining, flopping within my ribcage and pumping harder than it was designed to endure. I clutch at my chest. I think I'm having a heart attack. Cold air envelops all around me. It's on me. It's touching me. And I scream. The kind of scream that would make my throat bleed. I gasp for air. My scream now has words. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I slam the bathroom door shut and lock myself inside as I frantically try to rid the indescribable sensation off of my skin. Using my only and mostly wet towel and scrubbing my skin raw with it like a lunatic, I am unable to focus. Everything my body is experiencing is intensified many, many times over. My heart responds as if it will explode out of my chest. My body is shaking in a way that I must look as if I'm having a seizure. My long black hair is still dripping from being wet. It's sticking to my face and down my back. As I scratch my skin, it's causing my hair to become matted up and tangled. I'm rambling. Nothing makes sense anymore. The noise of my teeth hitting each other at such a high rate of speed is filling up my head as I can no longer make out the rupturing of my heart. I fixate on the relentless sound of my teeth. As my skin is inflamed and too tender to scour any longer. I remain locked in the bathroom with a single wet towel that now has my skin and blood on it. I remain locked in the bathroom with my body quaking with shivers. I remain locked in the bathroom with my teeth unnaturally chattering. I remain locked in the bathroom, being too petrified to move toward the door for my escape. I remain locked in the bathroom as I wait for Joe and Aaron to get back home and save me. I can't look away from the door.
I have chills. I do.
I'm going to go crawl under my duvet now with the lights on.
I know. See, I'm split because there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I would, that would be me. I would be sitting there petrified and telling you, but it got back. But then there's another part of me that says I would have been out that door and outside because they would have been waiting for me. They, you know, when they got back, I would have been waiting outside.
Right.
Because, but I, yeah, but no,
I couldn't break the barrier of the door. I couldn't get anywhere near the door. So I just went to the farthest part of the bathroom and just stared at the door. And you know, there's just nothing I can do. I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of there.
Now, how long do you have any idea how long it was, between when they got back and how long you waited?
That's a blur to me. I think it was a good amount of time. It was at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours that I waited for them to get back. And
oh my
when they
God,
did finally come, yeah, when I did finally, and you know, hearing noises in the house, you're not sure, like, is it them or is it him? You know,
yeah.
Like what's the is that a door opening? Is it them or is it just him again? And is he coming back for me? So
oh,
it
God.
Was it was you know it was very stressful. It was very scary.
I can't even imagine. I can't. I really can't. I wonder, with people reading this book, how many of the people reading messaged you and had their own ghost story to tell you? Did that happen a lot?
Yes, I've gotten a lot of stories. And I have had some readers message me and tell me that they have their own stories. One particular told me that their sister was constantly being attacked and when they were younger. And it was a very, very long time ago. And to this day, they don't talk about it. And when they do try to talk about it, the sister has decided to convince herself it was all imagined. And so she was like, I really want my sister to read this. It would confirm that what happened to her was not imagined, that it was real. And she's been trying since the book came out to get her to read it, and still not successful. But she just really wants her to have a confirmation that what happened to her was real, and it wasn't her imagination, you know, because her reading my story will just collaborate and just stand with her, and like what happened to you was real because it happened to me too.
Right. It does make me wonder, though, if everybody is strong enough to, you know, go through something like that. You know, I believe so wholeheartedly. I really do. But I've really never experienced. I mean, okay, there was one. The last house that we lived in was this. It was over 100 years old, this house was. It was this huge two-story. You know, just looking at it, you're like, oh, God, that looks haunted. You know what I mean? But it's just funny. But it had, like, a really, you know, long history of kind of sadness going on. But when we first moved in, I had these little knickknacks, and a couple of them were crosses. And I was going to put one up over this door. And, I mean, it was, like, the first week we were there. And I put it up there, and it flew across the room. It didn't just, I mean, you know, it would have just dropped, but this thing flew across the room. And I remember looking at my son. He was probably about 10 at the time. And we both of us were just like, that didn't just happen, you know?
Right, right. You're not yet. Right. Yeah. And that's how you do, and that's how you get through it. That's what happens is you see it, but you rationalize it like that didn't really just happen.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
That didn't, yeah.
Well,
then
that's
then
what I was
going to
say. When
you
said that,
right.
You know, the girl who sort of convinced herself that it was all in imagination, perhaps she's just better off staying that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Don't
because
try
it,
and tell her it's real. Just,
right.
Just let her, if that's the protective barrier
right.
She's put up. But, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I imagine that. That's probably better for her sanity because, you know, not
yeah.
everybody can cope with something like that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's traumatizing. It's very traumatizing. And and you block it out. Like for many years, many of these stories were just completely blocked out. Like I just have these moments where I have a memory of something and I'm like, oh my gosh, I like forgot about all this at all. And then my friends would start talking about the old house and I would start having memories and I was like, oh my gosh. And, you know, and I remember this. And then they were like, oh yeah, I remember when that happened to you. And the stories just started pouring out. And when I would allow myself to sit and relive it, because I can't just tell a story, I relive the story.
Yeah.
And to allow myself to do that is a very, very hard thing for me to do because it's very draining. And for me to write about things in this nature, I will spend a day or two just in bed. I can't get out of bed because it has drained me so badly because I've relived it. It's like it just happened to me all over again. And
wow.
It's not just me telling a story, you know, like me talking to you. It's me. I have to relive it. Like
yeah.
as if I'm going through it all over again. And it is very, very hard for me. So that's why a lot of my stories are they're very hard to bleed out onto words. And I avoid telling some stories for that very reason. And but then when I do tell them, I do write it, I hold them for probably way longer than I need to, not sharing them, because they're just so hard. And then when I do share it with author friends or you know, just very trusted inside people, they're messaging me. I'm bawling my eyes out. Oh my gosh, I'm sobbing. You know, and I just, you've got to publish this. You have to publish this. And I'm like, you know, so how, you know, and they're like talking to me about the story. They want to talk to me about what happened. And I'm like, but how was the writing? I don't want to talk about the story. How was the writing good? The writing was good, right? I'm bawling my eyes out. So that means it was good, right? I don't want to talk about the. I don't want to talk about the story. I've lived it twice. When it happened and when I wrote it, I've done it twice. I don't want to talk about that anymore. I just want to, you know. So the writing's good. So they're like, yes, it was so good. You have to publish this, and I'm like, okay. So that's all I needed to hear. Let's talk about something else.
It was good. I was in the bathroom with you, and then that scene in the church, I was in the church with you, too. That was pretty
yes.
cool.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
I really.
I know. I did not tell that. Like I said in the book, I never repeated it. I never thought about it again because I didn't even trust my memory of it. I didn't trust that what I saw was what I saw. I thought I imagined what I saw, and I buried it. I tucked it in, folded it up, threw it in a safe, and locked it up. And then that day at Walmart, and then I saw a friend of mine from church, and we were discussing it, talking, and I just had this overwhelming feeling. It was so strong. It was just so powerful. I need to tell her what I saw. And I told her, I said, I've never spoken of this. I have never told anybody. And I have not even allowed myself to think about it. But I have to tell you something. I have to tell you this. And when I told her, I felt like, oh, my gosh, she's going to call someone and have me committed. I felt like the biggest. I felt so crazy at that standing there. I felt crazy myself. I felt like there's something wrong with me. I need to talk to a doctor. I need a psychiatrist. And then she just kept staring at me like I was crazy. And I felt, and it made me feel even more crazy. And then when she said, I saw it too. And I was, my knees buckled. I literally had to hold onto my buggy full of groceries to not fall down on the ground because her saying that validated that everything I saw was real. And she said, Sister so-and-so saw it too. So that's three of us. Three of us saw it. The exact same thing, exactly how you told me you saw it. We all saw the same thing. And I just was, And I don't know what made me feel more crazy, the fact that she validated it and said that what I saw was real, or I think I would have preferred to think that I imagined it. So, I mean, what's more terrifying to know
right.
that the devil goes to church, you know, and
every
service there is a devil sitting there waiting to destroy everything that was built. And so that's every church, every Sunday, there is a devil sitting in there trying to find a way to destroy it. And that is a reality. That is a reality.
Yeah.
Because I saw it. I saw it.
Oh, I hate that we are just about out of time for our first segment here. I had so much fun with you on the show. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Yes, thank you for having me. And like I said, I told you I talk a lot, and I sound like a nervous Sandy Cheeks from SpongeBob.
No, not at all.
Hey, I like SpongeBob, so.
No, but we have all of your links put up on our Facebook page, so if anybody wants to stalk Joe, they can go there and do it. And I will definitely be stalking you more and getting you to come back on the show, because I had such a great time. I did.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I know I write way differently than everybody else. And I really appreciate that you took a chance with it, because, you know, I'm surrounded by romance and I'm surrounded by fiction. And here I am just writing my own stories, which are, you know, the truth is much, much, much stranger and scarier than fiction.
It is.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a delight. I'm
going
to have to get myself a copy of that book, because it sounds right up my street.
It was
right up my street. Yeah, I shall look forward to that.
Thank you,
Joe.
I appreciate it.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Goodbye. Have a good one.
Bye bye.
Right. Well, do you know, time is just flying by. I don't know where it's all going. So it's. It's new bottle of wine / wee wee time, so we will be right back in about 4 minutes.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. The girl with a sun in her eyes, and she's gone.
She's gone. She's gone.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
rebel to a bridge by a fountain where rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds, and you're gone! Picture yourself on a train in a station with plasticine porters, with looking glass ties. Suddenly, someone is there at the turnstile. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
No apologies, I know we played that last week, but had that many people saying, what the... and asking to hear that again. It's well worth a second run, I think, yeah?
It's a great song, yeah.
It's a great song, murdered beautifully. Well done, Bill Shatner. So, I love it, absolutely love it. So we need to buy his album, I think, and play all of it on the show. Just have a whole hour and a half of Shatner. It'd be great. In fact, get him on the show. See if we get him on the show. It'd be brilliant.
I'll work on it, yeah.
Could you? Because he's, honestly, I mean, you know, BS aside, you know, he's a hero of mine. The guy's great. He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. I think anybody in that sort of business, or even, you know, in our business, you know, who, you know, is happy to send themselves up and doesn't take themselves too seriously, you know, he's a winner in my book. That's what I say. And speaking of winners, how's that for a segue? You know what it is. You know what's coming up.
Okay.
I do.
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
It's back in the review. How are you, Mom?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fine.
Uh-oh. She didn't say she was fine. So maybe
she's
not fine.
I'm fine, y'all. So, hey, back in the review, what delights do you have for us this evening?
Well, the book that I'm going to review is called Bound. It's by Matt Hickman and Andrew Lennon. It is self-published. This is a really gruesome little tale, and I'm telling you, it's good. I wasn't surprised, but a lot of times I think when some writers write gruesome, you know, they throw in gore for gore's sake. This is not like that. But, oh, my gosh, it's intense. It's about a murder investigation and the women that were killed, but it's told through the eyes of the killer, which was really kind of different for me. But the details are awesome. It made me squirm. I was like, oh, my God. And these guys can make your butt pucker. I am not kidding you. It is.
That's what I look for in a book.
Yeah. There were some seasons where I went, ooh. You know, and that didn't happen very often. But, yeah, I really loved it. And, X, you need to read it. You would like it.
Yeah, I'm still stuck in the. Did you say butt pucker? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Could we not discuss puckering butts on my show, please? The family show, please.
Really, you're gonna say something about what we talk about? I think it's been like 2 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks now that we've not talked about poo on the show, so we can pucker our.
I'm having withdrawals.
And I said, trust Becky to lower the tone. Just, you know, seriously.
You love me.
We do. where can we? Well, first of all, how many Becky stars does it earn?
I would give it 9.5.
Ooh, awesome.
Good. Yeah.
I must read then. So, where can we find it?
It's on Amazon.
Awesome.
What isn't?
Right.
What isn't on Amazon? It's for, you know, I was talking to myself actually, but this just my, it's my first stop now. Everything on Amazon, that, you know, it's hedgehog food or, you know.
Yeah.
Just the most bizarre stuff. I wonder if Amazon's got, I mean, you know, hedgehog food, for goodness sake. Who in Amazon decided we need to keep hedgehog food in?
Yeah.
And they do. That's where I get my hedgehog food from. As you do. I mean, who doesn't, to be honest, you know. But, oh, did I tell you guys our latest animal acquisition?
No.
I don't think I've told her. I was India. I mean, she'd been nagging me for, God, years. I finally gave in. We have two tarantulas now.
Yeah. I knew that.
Which is pretty awesome.
I was hoping
I need to send Xena lots of pictures of them.
I mean,
they're only
good.
Babies at the moment, but they're pretty sweet, actually. They're pretty cool.
Yeah,
cool.
So sweet. I was expecting something, because I did know that you had, and I'm trying to block it from my memory, the because I was hoping you were going to say something cute and cuddly.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
They're only baby. I mean, they're probably only 2.5 inches long. They get sort of 4 or 5 times bigger than that, but they can. I tell you what I didn't realize. I mean, I've only ever handled sort of fully grown ones, and they're pretty. They're pretty slow and relaxed. But these, by Christ, they can move. We're sort of poking at them, and they're in the cage, and poking at them with a lid open.
I keep getting chills tonight.
One minute it was like down at the bottom of the cage. The next minute it was up and out of the cage and on top of the cage next to it in literally a heartbeat. It was like, how the hell did that happen? So I'm just gonna...
I would have been out the door and around the corner.
And I've
no,
seen,
we just
yeah,
managed
I've
to get him
these,
back in.
I've seen the pictures of James's daughter, India, and she looks so sweet, and she's just this, just sweet, and she's the one who wanted these tarantulas. That's so cool. That's kind of cool. It's, like, really kick-ass. I mean, me, I'm thinking, you know, if I ever come to Texas to see you, James, the tarantulas have to stay, you know, in the garage or something.
Locking
the
lids.
Yes. Oh,
no, they are like the snakes. I mean, they are very secure.
See, I'm good with the snakes. I'll handle them.
And yeah, ironically, certainly the big snake could kill you, but the tarantulas couldn't. So it's just a strange old thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
strange old thing.
It has way more legs than I do, and it's hairy. And no.
And more legs than me, and is hairier than me, too, so no.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's move on, shall we? Something more wholesome. So, hey, Becky, thank you so much for your review, and we will see you next, well, speak to you next week, because we've never actually seen
you. Thank you, Becky.
But we'll speak to you next week, my dear. Okay, bye,
bye,
y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bless her. Bless her. I love her accent. She's so gone with the wind, isn't it? It's brilliant.
I love it. When
I just imagine in the big bonnet and the big voluminous dresses and bustles and things, and just
is that how
you know, eating whatever it is they eat down there. You know, baking their own buns. And whatnot,
yeah, speaking
you
of
know.
Really southern stuff, the other day I had okra. Like,
grits.
Do you like okra? Okra.
Okra
oh, I love
is nasty.
Grits. Yeah.
Oh, it's
oh,
horrible.
I love okra.
Slimy,
fried okra
disgusting
is like the
stuff.
Best. When my daughter was little, I used to make fried okra as like a snack for us. That's kind of weird.
Ew.
It's like popcorn or something. I don't know.
Do you know, it's funny. It's like, it reminds me of spinach. You know, I will eat raw spinach and put it on a salad. It's lovely. I even just munch on it. You know, it's next. It's got that sort of peppery undertone to it. But cook it and it is like it's mucus. It's like eating mucus. Slippery, nasty mucus. And okra's the same. I mean, it's probably nice in some respects, but, you know, cooked.
It just
goes all slippery and... Bleh. No. And it's grown, to be fair, it's veg. I'm very anti-vegetables. I'm not big on veg,
yeah.
Obviously. You know, so, I mean, although, you know, this is why I love America. You know, when you eat out, you know, on the vegetable part of the menu, they have mac and cheese. So here, mac and cheese is a vegetable, which is fantastic. I love that.
We're making America great again.
Making America great. And that's exactly why you guys have Donald Trump as a president, because you think mac and cheese is a fucking vegetable. Seriously. Seriously.
Oh,
anyway.
I need more wine.
I think we need to get our next guest on. Unless you don't.
I was drinking.
You were drinking. I should have guessed, really, shouldn't I? So our next guest is Mr. Joe Willey, who is the author of... My brain has gone absolutely
Blood
blank
in
now.
The Woods. Blood in the Woods.
Do you know, it's been a long day. I've been up since 5:30. My brain's just about had it now. Yes, indeed, Blood in the Woods. I read the book, and it is... as we were talking to our previous guest, because it's based in fact, it scared the, if you pardon the pun, scared the willies out of me. It was.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not gonna spoiler alert. We'll bring Joe on. Joe, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
Sorry, I could wax lyrical about your book all night, but I figured we'd let you do that.
How are you guys doing
Wonderful
tonight?
Wonderful to chat to you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Always. Hey, you know, I told you to call me the other day, but I figured out that it's easier to catch herpes faster than catching you on the phone. So I finally
It's funny because I'm not a big one for phone, because I prefer to text a message, because I can do that whilst I'm doing other things.
Shit. God,
the
like
thing
the
you have to remember
is
if I am having a text conversation with you, there's a good chance I'm having a poo as well.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You got to text and poo, man. That's how it happens. Got to do it that way.
It's all about filling my time, because I'm seriously that busy with one thing, you know, with my own writing and the publishing thing and all the rest of it, that I even have to work while I'm going to go. You know, I used to read on the toilet. Now I catch up on emails and messages. So
yeah,
I do apologize.
That's where I normally have my visions of, or my ideas for like a poster or a flyer. Normally when, you know, I'm like, you know, one good push in, then it'll come to me and I'll whip out the phone and start knocking stuff out. So that idea's coming to shitter.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, I mean, it's that, the shower as well. I think it's because my brain likes to play tricks on me. You know, I'm in the shower and obviously I count my phone with me, et cetera, et cetera. And my brain thinks, oh, this is the best. I just suddenly have the best idea I've ever had in my entire life. And it tells you, and by the time you got out of the shower, you've going to have forgotten this, bucko. But I actually have, my wife bought me one of these nifty, I think it's something they use like underwater. And it's actually a waterproof pad and pencil. So I can actually jot things down. But the problem then is, because I'm so chronically short-sighted, of course, I don't have my glasses on. So I'm there hunched in the corner of the shower writing on this pad, squinting at it from like 2 inches away. So for goodness sake, I mean, this is what I've become. This is what I've
Indeed.
Become. So, hey, Joe, I mean, Blood in the Woods. I mean, you know, you and I have discussed this particular book in length. And, I mean, please tell us about it, or tell our listeners about it.
Well, yeah, and people have been following it for a while. Of course, it was published with a publisher that I shall not name. It's the He Who Shall Not Be Named publisher a year ago. It got published in, like, December.
There's only us listening. You can name names if you want.
Yeah, but it came out December of 2016. And, I mean, I had finished – that was the first novel, you know, manuscript I'd ever written. And I finished it in 2009, in like December of 2009, and I had never touched it for years. So until, you know, I got with that first publisher, so I pursued it for like, you know, 6-7 years trying to get it published, because I knew I had something, I knew I had a story to tell, and it came out and it sold over 300 copies in like the first like 2.5 months. Publisher took all my money. I didn't get anything, so I broke my contract out with them, and I went and self-published the novel, dude, because it was selling well. I mean, on the I guess for an independent author, a guy who'd never sold, you know, a piece of literature a day in his life. I mean, 300 copies in 2.5 months. Like, some people don't do that in like a lifetime with some of their work.
That is good going, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it self-published and it was doing well. I had a friend, Katie Justice. She was a ex-military police officer. She had put some edits on it just to tighten it up. Because when the novel it came out from my publisher the first time, I was really embarrassed by it, and I wasn't happy with it. But it was very poorly edited, and everyone knows, or anyone who's written a novel and had a good editor. I mean, like, I don't even consider myself like an author half the time. I consider myself a storyteller, and it's, you know, it's the job of the editor and a good publisher to, you know, clean it up, get it ready to go. And that never happened until, of course, I got with Hellbound, which is why, and once the novel got re-released, once we pulled it from being self-published, that's why I knew I had to get it to a good place. And now that's why all the great reviews are pouring in even more. And it's getting a lot of reviews everywhere, like from horror websites to authors. Jacob Floyd from Jake Floyd Ghost of Monsters, and he's also an author with Hellbound, reviewed the novel, and Elizabeth Isabel Blackhorn. I didn't ask any of these authors to do that for me, and I never ask anyone to, hey, do this for me for a favor. I don't believe in doing that. That's why you'll never really see me do that for an author. I appreciate the ones who do it for me, but I can't really give that in return. I don't know why. I just feel that you can get caught up in a web of just selling bullshit and getting stuck into a group that is just almost like just like a group at school that, you know, everybody just gets in this circle and boost each other's up even when you fucking suck. So I can't yeah. really do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Not to say no one's work does that. I'm just being real. I'm probably the most realest dude or that you probably talk to most of the time. And so I just sort of steer away from that. But, you know, it's getting great reviews, and you guys with Hellbound did an amazing job with it. And hats off to you, James. We had a lot of discussion. Xtina, you too. Editing it and getting into the narrative and tightening it up and making it actually a very good piece of literature to get out there to readers, and it's doing wonderful.
And you know, the story itself is again, as you're saying to our our previous guest, you know, because it is based in fact, which we can come to in a minute or two, you know, it's so. Sort of every day. I mean, it's, you know, it's childhood, it's kids being kids, it's, you know, it's not kids doing seances, and it's just kids just getting inadvertently caught up in something incredibly sinister. And it's the sort of thing that could pretty much happen to anybody anyway.
I think that's what makes it scary. Yeah, it's very believable, and a lot of those things I did experience in my childhood. Of course, you know, fiction, there's always truth in fiction. You know, it's a well-told lie. Because as a storyteller, I had to make it entertaining. Most of the events that readers are reading about, you know, across the world and reviewing, a lot of that happened. And what most readers don't know is that Blood in the Woods, you know, well, people who read it know it takes place in the late 80s, early 90s. But what they don't know is that some of the graphic violence in it, especially towards that climatic ending, is based off the true life crimes from the Hosanna Church in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, which was only like 2 or 3 miles from Hammond, where I grew up. And HBO's hit show True Detective is based off those crimes committed in that church that was in Hosanna Church in Ponchatoula. And I didn't know it until I spoke to my friend Angela Owens, who is actually one of the characters in the book that readers are reading about. And she told me, she was like, Joe, I don't know if you knew this, but one of those guys that was convicted in that crime or with, you know, the horrible crimes that were committed there lived on our street growing up as a kid. And so when she told me that, it severely sent chills down my spine because I didn't know at that, you know, she told me this like a year ago. So I was like 35 years old hearing for the first time that maybe the things I was experiencing were, you know, It was real. It made it even more terrifying when I found that out. So that's just a little insight to the novel and the true stories and events that it's based off of. So it really creeped the shit out of me when I found that out.
I can imagine, yeah.
you know, not even talking about the creepy stuff, because that was really, that was awesome. But the when Jody did the he did this trick with the bike and he broke his, was it his arm or his leg? I can't remember. Did you really, was that real? Did you, because that,
yeah. Yeah, I got the straw in my arm, sister, to prove it.
Yes, you know.
I had to get pins put in, everything. And the kid's name was Chris Jones. I changed the name in the novel because at the time I didn't, I hadn't spoke to him in years. And I was like using MySpace. Like MySpace was the big thing at the time when I was writing this novel. Facebook wasn't even but a couple of like thumbs up likes that you could do. And but the guy dared me one day, and I was a daredevil, and Chris knew I couldn't make that damn jump, but I did it anyway. And it came out, it was not a good idea.
Reading that part hurt me. I think I was cradling my own arm going, ow. And
yeah.
I've never broken a bone before, but that was, you did a really good job of writing that scene right there. That really messed me up. It did. So.
I think one of the things that struck me was the way it was just like, just a lot of, it was like the, just the everyday thing, the relationship with the, you know, between the two kids, the kid and his mom, and it's just everyday. And then suddenly, so we, which meant when the unpleasantness happened, it was more shocking. You know, it wasn't like building up. It was like, da-da-da, happy, you know, and then boom, whoa, you know. It just, what? You know, I think one of my favorites, again, spoiler alert, my favorite scenes was when they met up with one of the bad guys in the mall, and they were chased around the mall. That was just really just terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now that was true to a certain extent. There was, that's where I based the character, one of the bad guys in the book, that had a hair lip. It was me and my friend Jack, best friend still to this day, Jack McSpadden. We were up in the Hammond Mall. We were up in the arcade messing around, and there was just weird, this creepy dude wearing like a trench coat, looked like a Columbine shooter, even years, you know, before Columbine. And he had a hair lip, and he had a pentagram shirt walking around. So he looked really funny. And we were upstairs, and he came up to Jack, and he grabbed him by the arm, and he like, he didn't really shake him, but he grabbed him. I'd have to get Jack to tell you the story. Maybe he'll call in a second, try to chime in on this if he's listening. But he grabbed him, and he said something along the lines of, like, you're going to give me some blood or something like that. And it freaked the shit out of us. And we took out running. And my mom, she was downstairs of the mall. And we ran around. And this guy did follow us. Now, he didn't run and chase us. And it wasn't as, you know, entertaining as it is in the novel. But he did stalk us through the mall for a bit until we linked up with my mother. And then he just stared at us and he walked away. So, and a lot of weird things during these times were that – weird stuff was happening. So like when I came up with the idea to write this, I just really started remembering my childhood and the horrible things that was, you know, happening. And when I found out about the crimes that happened at the Hosanna Church, I just started weaving it together. And I had a story to tell, and I just tried to knock it out of the park.
I think you did a great job. I do.
Yeah,
do you have a reading for us? And well, I say that with a question mark, and I know you have a reading for us, and it's really long, so I might have to cut you off, but I want to hear as much as we have time for. So.
Sure. Yeah. I'll read something. Yay. I don't have quite the reader's voice, but I'll give it a shot.
Oh no, you do.
All right, pull it on up. So I'll be reading from the prologue. Give everybody a little bit of taste of, you know, what's to come with the novel. And this is also a true, this did happen to a certain extent with my uncle who he passed away several years ago. I think it was 2015. But during the 70s, he and his friends did run into something in the woods that startled them and stuck around for years. So I'll start from here.
Okay.
All right. The Graveyard, 1975. On a deep south Louisiana country road, a young boy by the name of Jerry Jones Jr. patrolled up and down Ride Road on his yellow 1975 Schwinn. His slim body leaned from side to side as he pedaled back and forth, humming to himself an out-of-tune rendition of Casey and the Sunshine Band's Get Down Tonight. The boy's curly hair, most people would call it nappy, tightened as the wind pulled it back slightly as he waited for his three friends, the Benson boys. The Benson's father just happened to be one of the wealthiest men in all of Hammond. Jerry thought he was an architect or something, but all he knew for sure was that the man drew really neat pictures for people to build houses. This particular evening, Jerry and the Benson boys had decided to take an adventure, a detour to the local graveyard that sat but 3 miles away. The kids at school had been talking about it for weeks. And of course, the kids in their early teens, a graveyard was not just a chilling place to be, but also a location you gained notoriety for visiting. And so, today was that day that Jerry was to earn his fame for being one of the only boys in school to have set foot in the place. The old bone yard's reputation was a fearsome one, which kept all but the most hardy at bay. Jerry watched as the Benson boys approached on their bicycles, his heart pounding with excitement and nerves. Unbeknownst to them, they really should have stayed home. The boys rode toward their destination, making a sharp turn onto a small dirt road lined by a bunch of oak and willow trees that stood tall and proud on both sides of the street. Their branches hung halfway over the road, providing the boys welcome shade from the murderous Louisiana heat. Taking the turn a little too fast, the front tire of Jerry Schwinn almost lost traction. Skillfully, he regained balance, keeping himself from being thrown over the handlebars like a man from a skittish horse. The graveyard rested upon a small hill and contained 20 to 25 graves, many of the headstones illegible. It was well shaded by the surrounding woods, which served to give the place an eerie appearance. The second they stepped into the graveyard, Jerry noticed something strange. The place was unnaturally quiet, a pretty bizarre occurrence, since birds, wildlife, the wind, something should have been moving around in those woods. As the gang made their way further in, avoiding the creation of any noise, they spotted a dead bird lying upon a gravestone to their right. It looked like a crow, although it was difficult to be certain since the thing had been completely gutted. The bird's lifeless black eye stared up into the beautiful fall sky as if it were searching the heavens for some place to go. The poor creature's intestines were draped across a gravestone, and it looked to Jerry as if someone had tried to write a ghoulish message with them. A cool breeze blew through the woods, making the feathers on the dead bird flutter as if for the last attempt to take flight, and each of the boys felt goosebumps on the backs of their necks, like ghostly fingers were caressing them. "What the hell happened to it?" Daniel asked, his eyes fixed on the bird's ruined corpse and the visiting flies that buzzed around it. "No idea," Jerry replied as he studied the thing with morbid fascination. The oldest of the Benson brothers squatted down next to Daniel. He poked at the bird's guts with a long stick, scattering the flies. "Stop that," Alvin shouted at him. "That's nasty. You might catch a sick disease or something." Keith and Jerry giggled as Alvin chastised his older brother, broad smirks on their faces as he rounded on them. "I want to go home," Alvin whined. "Doesn't this place feel weird to you? It's too damn quiet. I can actually hear myself think." Keith and Jerry snickered again. "Everything surrounding this graveyard is just as dead as it is." He pointed a trembling finger at the dead bird. Jerry stood up. He did have a peculiar feeling about the place, but he was trying to play it cool. No way he was going to be the chicken shit who let the graveyard spook him. "Yeah, let's go. There's nothing special here. You ready, Keith?" he said. "Sure." Keith stood up and threw the stick back on the ground. Keith happened to glance over to his left and noticed something in the far corner of the graveyard. "Jerry, Daniel." "What?" both boys answered in unison. Keith pointed to the far left side of the graveyard, his mouth gaping. "Look," he whispered in a voice that didn't quite sound like his own. There, in the corner of the graveyard, were 20 odd dead birds, all stacked on top of each other. From what the boys could make out, most had been gutted the same way as the first one they'd seen. It also became obvious upon further investigation that some had their eyes gouged out, heads torn off, and their guts stuffed inside their beaks. Someone had been getting their sick, twisted kicks torturing and mutilating birds in the graveyard, and whoever it was had been at it for quite some time. Some of the birds were decomposing, their thin, fragile bones stabbing through what remained of rotted flesh. Jerry's brain spun, images skittering across his racing mind as to how the cruel deed had been done. The bird laid upon a headstone, its delicate body struggled, beak attempting to bite the hand that held it firm, a knife pressed firmly to its breastbone. A faint pop would sound as the knife went in, the poor bird squawking in agony. And its torturer would enjoy every second of the creature's pain as he yanked out its victim's innards with quick, expert precision. Jerry snapped himself out of it, knowing full well that the vision he'd just conjured was going to keep him up tonight. The very thought sent chills down his spine. The sun began to sink towards the horizon, and darkness of night prepared to cover the graveyard. The boys were still far from home, and Jerry knew his father would be bringing the stick to his rear end if he didn't get home before dark. "Let's go," Jerry mumbled. He craved the safety of home. As the boys made their way towards their bikes, sounds drifted in from the distance, voices, the first noise they'd heard since their arrival at the graveyard. Frozen with fear, they all listened to the voices, coming through a tad more clearly now. "Do you hear that?" Daniel asked. "Yeah, I hear it," Jerry whispered. "Shh," he hissed at them. The voices didn't appear to be getting any closer, but it did sound like more voices had joined them. If anything, they seemed to be moving away from where Jerry and his friends were standing, rock still and terrified. "They're in the woods," Keith played the tough guy. "Let's go take a look." "I can't move, guys," Alvin was the first to admit. "I'm too scared." Alvin was the youngest and the puniest of the brothers, and hence the most skittish. "What if they catch us spying on them and beat the shit out of us? What if they call the cops on us for trespassing? Or what if they're a bunch of backwoods psychos who will kill us like them?" He nodded towards the stack of mutilated crows and squirmed at the thought. "Quit being such a chicken shit, Alvin," Keith growled. "Quiet," Jerry spat. "Alvin, you can stay by the bikes. Me and Keith go take a seat, okay?" "Okay," Alvin nodded, and his face flushed. "Daniel," Jerry added, you can stay here with him." "Sure." Daniel couldn't hide his disappointment. Middle child syndrome was a motherfucker. "Cool." Jerry turned to Keith. "Let's go, but don't make a sound. Got it?" "Got it," Keith agreed. The two made their way through the graveyard, trying their damnedest to make sure to make no sound at all, towards a natural depression at the far end that went down a good 50 feet and was lined by trees and bushes all the way down to its bottom. The voices were getting louder as the boys approached, Jerry and Keith dropping to their knees to get a better view of what lay through the dense bushes. In there, Jerry observed something he knew he'd never be able to forget for as long as he lived. There,
right, well, Todd, we're going to stop you there, Joe. We're going to stop you there. Just
boom.
The cliffhanger. So if people want to know what they observe, they're going to have to buy the book.
There we go, yeah.
Buy the book, people. That was fantastic. Well read, sir. Well read.
Not too bad for a couple beers.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
you, Carol
Colum. Your homemade brew is the best.
Oh, I wanted to tell you that one of our listeners, Denise, she was saying that the trampoline part where they tried to see who was in the neighbor's yard, she said that was scary. I wanted to let you know.
You know, that was
Thanks,
you know, that was such a visual scene. You know, I you were there on the trampoline, you know, just that bouncing up and just, you know, just catching a glimpse, you know, just that yeah. Yeah, that was
yep.
I think that's one of the things I like about the book is that he sort of puts you there.
Mhm, it does.
You know what I mean? You're there with the kids and you're living it with them, which makes it even the more, you know, it just makes you stick in your head a little bit more as well. I think.
And what makes it more terrifying is that is a true story, 100% true.
Yeah, that does make it creepier.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
100%. 100%. I can still remember it this day.
Wow. Well, so, I mean, it's obviously something that you know, stayed with you. And I guess it is the sort of thing that stays with you and helps define you throughout your life. I mean, you know, did it leave sort of emotional scars? Or, you know, how did you cope with all that?
I don't think my childhood scarred me at all. It was a wonderful childhood. It was like the most magical time of my life, like it is for most people. I don't think it really terrified me until I became an adult. And my best friend Jackie lost his sister Jamie. And when we lost Jamie, it was a couple years after the crimes had been committed in that church. And when we lost her, I just really started thinking back to my childhood, and I had the events that took place in that congregation on my mind. And I just started writing, and I think that's when it really became terrifying to me, like some of the things I encountered and witnessed and ran into dealing with the occult when I was a kid. And so I think I really made my childhood in that novel scarier than what it is, what it actually was.
You know, not only that, but I think that, you know, a lot of times when we're kids, we don't realize, you know, what, you know, how scary or how bad something is until we get older. It's only when we look back and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I lived through that, you know, or something. I think
when you're a kid, you know, that's that certain feeling of, invincibility about,
yes,
you know, you,
exactly.
You're going to live forever, you're indestructible. And like
and
you
even
say,
after
yeah,
something
you happens, get older and you realize just what a dangerous, unpleasant place the world is, that it puts a shiver up your spine. I mean, nothing, you know, supernatural or occult. Some things I got up to as a kid just terrify me now. If my kids ever did that, I would flatten them because it's just so reckless and stupid.
I know. I remember skating down this huge hill that, you know, cars were coming both ways. I mean, I don't know how many times I could have, you know, hit a car going down. And,
oh, yeah.
Well, we used to play
we used to play like we were tightrope walkers on the the little barriers right on the side of the road. Balancing on those, and just if we'd have fallen the wrong way, that would have been it, you know.
and that's one of the big compliments I get from the book. I had my boss actually finished it. He picked it up and he read it, and when he got done, he walked over to me, and he was like, "Man, I really want to go call my friends." He was like, "My childhood friends. I want to call them," and that made me happy. Like, maybe people reading, you know, this heartfelt yet terrifying tale, it'll make them remember the good times besides for the times that we live in now. And you'll reach out to someone that you care about, and you'll pick up a phone and maybe talk to someone you hadn't talked to for years. And I think that'll be the message behind Blood in the Woods, you know, friends, family, first love, and true horror. And a lot of great reviews coming out, and like had made you guys remember things that you did when you were kids. You know, it falls sort of in the same category as, you know, Stranger Things and It. And I mean, the novel's been compared to a deadlier homage of It and Stand By Me. So I've had that numerous times from reviewers and websites, and I think I could die a happy man after that. You know, just having those two stories, those two stories compared to your work, your first novel ever, is just sort of true. So,
nice, a true accolade, definitely.
We are just about out of time, and I've had so much fun tonight. This has been such a great night, and I'm so glad you came on.
I know, because, you know, I've gone by so quick, it's scary.
Yes, it has. But I also want to say, if anybody wants to stalk J.P. Willie, they can go to our Facebook page, and all of his links are up there. And you have to promise to come back and see us, and we'll have to do a whole show just you, because I definitely think, you know, we can make him read for the entire show. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. And we want to know what's coming next as well. So
you guys got to get some more six pack. And Garrett Sorum, one of my staff sergeants, has to run some more of that home brew over, boy.
Oh yeah. Do you know, I'm long overdue to. I've got a home brew set here. Me and my boy used to brew it, so long overdue. I think we should do that maybe this weekend. get the brew on, definitely.
Indeed. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I really do. Thank you.
No, thank you for joining us, Joe. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we will have you on again very, very soon.
We will.
All right, that's great.
Okay, have a good one. And I'm afraid it is that time, Xtina, where we say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.